From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thank you for joining us today on ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you today, and get to do this every Monday. Steve Ryman will be back with you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week. I just really appreciate our audience. They are really kind and nice. Send me a lot of questions. In fact, I'm going to go through a bunch of questions that came from you, our audience, about mortgage lending and reverse mortgages and everything else. My good friend Spence Llewellyn. Spence, how long have we known each other? I know you became a realtor with the Vaughn Company, and I bought the first house you ever sold.
1986.
Was it 86?
We were 12.
That's a few years ago. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Spence is with Davis Mortgage. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's been in the mortgage business over 30 years. He has expertise in VA, FHA, conventional, and reverse mortgage programs. He's a U.S. Air Force veteran. Thank you for your service, sir. He has lending experience and knowledge of all the available loan options to tackle any mortgage financing questions, and that's why I like to have him, because he helps us answer those questions. He's with Davis Mortgage, the Llewellyn team, 4313 Corrales Road, Suite 6 in Corrales, and the phone number is 505-263-2000. Thanks for being here, Spence.
Thank you for having me.
Let's get started. Tell me, what are the most common questions you have about reverse mortgages? Because I think that many people, until maybe you saw Tom Selleck doing reverse mortgage commercials, I think he did a lot just because he was one of the guys doing it.
Right.
He did a lot to lower people's suspicions about reverse mortgages, and you feel pretty good about them as a financial instrument.
Absolutely. Reverse mortgages are a great, great tool for people in their retirement years as the way to enhance their retirement financial situation.
What are the essentials of a reverse mortgage? Kind of explain that. I know you've done it before,
sure,
but we may have new listeners today.
Right. The basics are, it's for people 62 years or older who live in their home as a primary residence, who have some substantial equity, and they want to access that equity for a number of reasons. They can access the equity to pay off an existing first mortgage, so then they don't have a monthly mortgage payment. They would still pay for their taxes and insurance, but the big chunk of their mortgage payment goes away. Mm. That frees up income in their retirement years. Or they have a lot of equity and no mortgage, but they want to use the funds for something else. For example, we just helped somebody do one that bought a second home. People will use it to pay for long-term health care insurance. So in the future, when they do leave the home, they've got a place to go, and they paid for the insurance to take care of them.
Gotcha. Well, and let's be frank, Spence. I mean, I've had you talk with Brian Cochran, who's on our show every Friday. He's a well-respected, well-known Christian financial advisor.
Great
guy. You had a chance to meet him?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, definitely, in some cases, reverse mortgages. But Brian is one of those guys that is dealing with people that have been disciplined to save money. And he's investing those funds and doing a great job. But frankly, we're talking about people that maybe they've lived in a house for a long time. They've built a lot of equity. The home values have increased exponentially, especially over like the last 4 or 5 years. So maybe you've got a lot of equity, but you haven't saved a lot of money. So give us the basics. Like, let's say you have a home that would appraise today for $400,000, and you've paid off the loan, and you may want to retire soon. Maybe you have taxes and insurance. How much money can you free up on a $400,000 house?
Well, it's typically based on age.
Okay.
Somebody who's 62 is going to be able to borrow, get a loan of about 38% of the value.
Okay.
Somebody who's 75 is going to get closer to 45% of the value. So what that means is now you have a loan. Let's say your house is worth $400,000, and you could get a loan just under $200,000. And you can take that money in a lump sum. You could set it up as a line of credit to access when you need extra funds. And oftentimes, financial planners will advise people to use a reverse mortgage as a source of funds so they don't take money out of their investments. They keep their money in their investment accounts working for them. They need extra money. They can pull it out of the line of credit tax-free, and they can pay it back to the line of credit and use it again in the future.
I love that. Very interesting. So I mentioned that listeners email me questions. And by the way, if you're a listener and you want to email a question for the next time we have Spence on the air, you can email me jim@abqconnect.online. jim@abqconnect.online. I'm going to do something a little different for the rest of the time that I get emails. I'm going to forward those to you, Spence, because okay. I think people don't want to wait 2 or 3 weeks to get the answer, and we're having you on, you know, every so often, and we appreciate your time.
Happy to respond.
Here's a listener question. I recently lost my spouse. I own a home that is worth $500,000, $500,000, and it's free and clear. I'm no longer receiving $2,600 per month of my spouse's Social Security. If I want to make sure I have access to additional money, how do I obtain a reverse mortgage? Is there like a qualification?
Well, the first answer to the question is, how would they obtain the mortgage? Mm-hmm. Reach out to a reverse mortgage professional. And I have to say that because so often loan officers will say, yes, I can do a reverse mortgage, but they've never done one or done so few, they really don't know the intricacies of the program. That being said, reach out to a reverse mortgage professional and say, I'd like some information about getting a reverse mortgage. And then find out how it can, your equity can be utilized. Like in this example, the lady could probably reach out and get $250,000 or have access to that much of her $500,000 in equity. So now with that $250,000, she could set up to have a specific dollar amount paid to her every month for as long as she lives. She could elect to set up a line of credit and have a smaller amount every month for as long as she lives. She could take a lump sum or a combination of all the above.
Does she have to have certain income to qualify?
The only income we look at for qualifying is enough to pay the property taxes, the homeowner's insurance, and a small amount for home maintenance every month.
Gotcha. And again, that maintenance is kind of important. You've got to do a little bit to, and when you're elderly, you may not be able to do the work that you used to do when you were younger, right?
Correct.
So you're kind of budgeting that in. I like that you're helping people, Spence, you know, understand the budgeting of that whole process.
Absolutely. It's critical.
And $250,000, especially when you're not paying a mortgage payment, can go a long way to supporting you.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure she doesn't say it here in this example, but she probably has some Social Security income.
Correct.
And may be subsistence for her. And if she has a credit line through a reverse mortgage, because she's not saved a lot of money, that may just be there in the case of emergency.
Right.
So let me ask you about her heirs. We're all going to pass away. I mean, that's just a given, right?
Right.
That's the one thing that's
guaranteed,
common to all of us, right? So let's say that she passes away and she's taken out about $100,000 on a reverse mortgage. Well, the house is worth $500,000. Do the heirs just lose that house to the bank that did the reverse mortgage?
Absolutely not. That's one of the biggest misconceptions or myths about a reverse mortgage is that the bank owns the home. The home would still be in this lady's title, mm-hmm. title in her name, and all the equity is hers. When she passes away, it would transfer to her heirs. So her heirs could sell the property, get the money, divide it up.
Or you could even refinance it, right?
Absolutely.
On a regular mortgage.
Stay in the house. They could put a regular mortgage in place, pay off the reverse mortgage, and go forward that way.
Tell us what mortgage rates are doing today. I know that, you know, if we were talking about this 24 months ago, we had 30-year mortgages in the 3.5% range, but that's no longer the case, right?
Correct. Mortgage rates right now are in the mid-sixes, so 6.5%, for example. There was a lot of news a week ago about the stock market really going down and mortgage rates dropping tremendously. Well, that changed in 2 days. Mm-hmm. So the market's kind of settled out with the news. Rates went back up. But again, we're in about a 6.5% range. But that's down from where we were a little over a year ago when some of the rates were getting close to 8%.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't think people understand they're always focused on the Fed funds rate. This is the interest rate that banks and financial institutions pay for money.
Correct.
And let's say that's at 2.5%. That's not really the rate that affects mortgage rates. What affects mortgage rates are bond rates, like 30-year Ginnie Mae's, 15-year, 10-year,
right,
et cetera. And sometimes when you have really successful stock market, the bond market is not so successful. So when bonds go down, the rates go up.
Correct.
But when bonds are, I've heard the term flight to quality, where people are investing in the bond market, that makes rates go down.
Correct. Correct.
So, Spence, is it actually possible for you to predict what rates are going to be doing?
No, if I could do that, as you know, I'd have been retired a long time.
That's right. You'd be the most wealthy. And that's the thing that people don't, maybe there's some undue pressure on mortgage people, because sometimes you call and you get a rate, and then 2 days later you call another lender and they've got a lower rate, but you didn't call back the first lender and their rate's probably the same if you didn't lock it in. So it's got to be really hard to get customers to understand that you can't really predict what rates are going to do.
Not at all. I mean, we get projections from various sources in the financial markets as to what they predict rates will do. Mm-hmm. But again, all it takes is a crazy day on the stock market one way or the other, and that could make rates fluctuate. Or a catastrophe worldwide, somewhere else in the world, that makes people scared. Back to that flight to quality, a bunch of money goes into bonds, rates go down.
Right.
For example, this Wednesday, the CPI, Consumer Price Index report, will come out, and all the markets are watching that real closely. If it shows inflation going up a little bit, rates will go up. So there's so many factors that come into what makes the mortgage interest rate that you almost have to compare daily, call your loan officer daily, and then if you're comfortable with the rate and the payment and you don't like worrying about it every night, lock in the rate, go to sleep, start thinking about moving into your new house or refinancing at the rate you locked in, but not worrying about what rates are doing on a daily or intraday basis.
This is not on my little list of questions, but if you want to get a mortgage, you're either buying or refinancing a house, what's the typical number of days it takes from application to closing?
Typical day, between 21 and 30 days.
Okay, so that's faster than what I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. We found that appraisal, what used to slow us down oftentimes was the appraisal, mm-hmm, and the appraisal turn times have gotten much better. So we can close a loan, like I say, 21 to 30 days.
Now, I had a guy that's actually on staff at Calvary Church ask me a question Sunday. He said, hey, do you know any appraisers? And I said, yeah, of course. I was in the mortgage business myself for a number of years. Now, a lot of the people I knew are retired. But we were just talking about our friend Heidi, who's been an appraiser. Now, when I was in the business, Spence, we could choose an appraiser. But that's no longer the case, is it?
Correct.
So even if I know an appraiser, we can't ask that appraiser to give us a special favor and appraise your house at a special number, because that's exactly why they made real estate appraisal, what do they call them?
Appraisal management companies.
There you go.
So it's all through a third-party service, of which the third-party company contracts with appraisers. And we not only do we not get to select the appraiser by a specific person, we can't talk to them about value. Whoever gets the assignment, we're not allowed to talk to them about the value.
And that was done to protect the consumer and protect investors, right?
Correct. Correct.
Because there was, frankly, in 2008, there was a lot of manipulation by lenders of appraisers and getting numbers that were not exactly hunky-dory.
Very high inflated, and then when the loans started going bad, the banks realized that this house was never near the value they told us.
Yeah. We're going to be back with Spence Llewellyn. He's with Davis Mortgage in Albuquerque. He's our Ask the Expert today. They're located at 4313 Corrales Road, Suite 6 in Corrales, 505-263-2000 is Spence's number. And again, you've recommended that with all these questions, people they should contact a mortgage professional, because, you know, there's some intricacies and some things that people need to know. I found it interesting that you said you really need to, though, if you're interested in a reverse mortgage, you need to make sure you actually call somebody that knows about them, because would you say a very low percentage of regular mortgage lenders do reverse mortgages?
Correct. And most of the very good loan officers that I know that are very, that focus on traditional mortgages, they know that reverse mortgage is a whole nother set of language, if you will, and a skill set that they just refer those out.
Gotcha.
Rather than try to do it themselves.
Yeah, and that sometimes can add up to additional fees and all kinds of
things. And just bad information.
Yeah, I like that. Spence Llewellyn is with us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. Hope you'll stay with us. We'll be right back. Davis Mortgage, the Llewellyn team. Spence Llewellyn in studio with me this afternoon answering questions that listeners have sent in to us. And Spence, I appreciate this because there's a lot of questions that people have. I mean, especially during the summer months, there's people thinking about, you know, should we move? Should we not move? Is it time? Are rates going to go down really low? So here's the listener question. I hear people say they want to buy a home, but they're waiting for rates to go down. Now, what I hear when they say that is they're waiting for 3% again on a 30-year loan. Well, back in the day when I was purchasing homes and doing that kind of thing, great rate was 7%.
Right.
But because in the last 4 or 5 years, we've had such really amazingly low rates, is there really a good chance that rates are going to go back to 3%? And again, I know you can't predict that, but...
It's highly unlikely, and highly unlikely in the next foreseeable future.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, the reason we got down that low is because of the pandemic and all the people that were out of work and the Fed increasing stimulus by dropping rates lower and lower and lower to keep the economy moving.
Right, right. So... Let's talk a little bit about, so you're thinking about moving, and right now you live in a home, you've got a payment of, let's call it $1,500 a month. You don't want that to go over $2,000, but you've gone from one child to three children, and you're kind of jammed in. You want to make a good investment. Should you be waiting for those rates to go down, or should you come in and make an application, see what your payment are mortgage people available to give you the relevant information you need to make a decision?
I think some are, and some, if you're not ready to move forward right now, they don't want to take the time to do that. I think it's totally, completely wise. And the best thing someone can do is before you, if you want to sell your home and buy a new home, go talk to a lender. Sit down.
Before you sell your home.
Before you do anything. Run all the numbers. It's no different than going to buy a car. Before you walk on a car lot, you want to have a feel for what the payment's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing if you're going to sell your home. Well, like you just mentioned, somebody whose family size has changed and they need a bigger house, they have a reason to move. But to find out, well, what can we afford, you got to talk to a lender. Find out exactly what you can qualify for. Get pre-approved. Now you're in the driver's seat when it's time to go make an offer on another home.
Spence, I've noticed, I go on realtor.com quite a bit because I just like to see what's going out there. I had that habit when I was a lender because I was primarily a construction guy. So I would go in and look at who was building what. Now I'm noticing builders out there that are, I didn't see this 3 years ago. They're building homes right now. Like I noticed there's one going in right next to Hoffmantown Baptist Church up in the Heights in Albuquerque. There's a whole subdivision going in right next door. And those homes seem to be affordable compared to other homes that are out there.
Right. The new home builders are certainly building. And what's interesting in the last year or so or 2 years, they've been subsidizing the interest rates to get interest rates, people at least a start rate in the fives. So they may get a rate at 5.5.
And now you're talking about the builder is subsidizing.
The builder's paying for that, correct.
Okay.
To keep the wheels turning for their building company.
Okay, so let's actually talk about how that really works. So to buy down a rate costs some money.
Correct.
So on $100,000, let's just say that's 2%. So that's $2,000. Well, you're talking about most of these homes in the Northeast Heights are in the $500,000 range. So you're really talking about 10 grand
right,
needing to be invested. So I want consumers to think about this. Your builder is making X amount of dollars when they sell you a house. So right now, they may be buying down rates for you by throwing in about $10,000 to buy down your rate. That's a pretty nice deal.
Absolutely. It's a way to help people get into the home and get started. But the thing to remember when they do that, the buy down typically is for 1 year or 2 years. So you may have, I use 5.5 as an example. You start at 5.5, the second year you're at 6.5, and the third year and going and beyond, the rate 7.5.
And then it's fixed from that point.
Correct.
So we call that a temporary buy down.
Absolutely.
And it's not a bad deal if you don't have to pay for it.
Right.
But you really are paying for
it. In the price of the home.
It's in the price of the home.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of like what car dealers have done forever, right?
Subsidize
some of their profit and get you down in terms of rate. Of course, it makes the rate more affordable. Now, talk to me about a big builder like a Pulte or a Syntex or somebody compared to a custom home builder who's building, you know, 10 homes a year instead of 500.
Right.
Is it all the same?
No, the big builders, the Pulte's or the D.R. Hortons or whatever, they have their own mortgage company. They have their own title companies, and they keep everything in-house that they can. Again, they sell the house. They can subsidize the financing, and they've got control of everything. A custom builder typically will have their client, the homeowner or the future homeowner, come visit a mortgage lender, get pre-approved for their permanent financing, and then we would send them to a construction lender, a bank, to do the construction loan and pay off the construction loan when the house is finished. So typically the custom builders don't have the flexibility to subsidize interest rates the way a big production builder does.
Yeah, and again, most of that is a temporary buy-down kind of situation. But you've mentioned already rates. What were rates here in the last couple of days? 6.5?
6.5.
Yeah, which...
It's a good rate.
That's a great rate. I mean, when I was buying my homes a few years ago, well, more than a few years
right.
ago, we'll let the actual number remain anonymous, I was happy with 7.5. I mean, well, that was a really low rate. I mean... when I first started in the lending business, rates were 13%.
Right.
And people have forgotten all about that.
Oh, when rates got to 10, I mean, I was a realtor at the time. Everybody was ecstatic. It's like, holy cow, here we go.
Yeah.
People will buy houses. I think the thing right now is people that are waiting for rates to go down before they buy a home are going to be rudely awakened, because the more rates go down, the more buyers are going to come into the market. And we have a limited supply of homes. So the more competition for those homes will actually keep prices up or push them even higher.
And you mentioned something during the break, and that is that you're seeing people that you've qualified for a loan. You're seeing them make offers on a house, and there are multiple offers that are being considered by sellers. So what can a person do with a mortgage company to make their offer more attractive to the seller?
I think the most important thing is to one, be pre-approved. And that means you've provided the documentation to the lender. We've had it looked at by an underwriter. So when the listing agent, the one who's got the house on the market, calls and asks, "Spence, tell me about the strength of this borrower or this buyer," I can tell them those things. We've already analyzed all their income. They're completely qualified. The other thing is to make sure the people know, can they go higher on the loan amount? They may qualify for a loan amount much higher than the property they're making an offer on. We don't tell the seller that necessarily until the offer is made.
But so that gives the buyer and their realtor some leverage to negotiate.
Absolutely. So if they see the house listed at $350,000, they could offer $350,000, but they know in the back of their minds, if there's multiple offers, we can raise our purchase price $10,000 and still qualify.
Yeah, I love that. Spence Llewellyn with us. He's with the Llewellyn team at Davis Mortgage. Phone number 505-263-2000. Llewellyn team is you and your daughter.
Correct.
And your daughter's doing processing. She's been doing that with you a long time.
Yeah, about 17 years.
I love that. And having a person that is very knowledgeable about all the programs, including reverse mortgages, is very important. So I hope this information you're getting today listening on KLYT is important to you. Spence Llewellyn with us. We're going to spend the second half hour of our show with Spence really just addressing emailed questions from listeners that have sent me in questions. If you have questions, feel free to address it at jim@abqconnect.online. jim@abqconnect.online, and we'll have Spence answer as many questions as we can. If we don't get to your questions today, we'll make sure we get to them in another few weeks. Spence Llewellyn with us. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. Spence Llewellyn with us with Davis Mortgage. They're located at 4313 Corrales Road, Suite 6 in Corrales, 505-263-2000. Spence, our Ask the Expert on mortgage lending. Spence, I like having you because you're talking about reverse mortgages as well as regular FHA, VA, you know, conventional financing. Not a lot of people have all of that expertise, but you've been doing this a while. Yeah. And I like the fact that your daughter's working with you. You said 17 years. Is that Christy that's
right.
working with you?
Correct.
That's great. I haven't seen her for a long time. You're doing the grandpa thing now too, right?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Nope.
Well, I'm way ahead of you, man. I'm about to have six.
Right on.
Thank the Lord.
Keep you out of trouble.
There's nothing as amazing as my four granddaughters right now. We have two new grandchildren coming. I don't know exactly.
Sweet.
I think December and January, but we don't know what we're having. And, I know there's all these gender reveals and everything. My kids like finding out when the baby's born. Perfect. I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, that's neat.
I think that's fascinating. Hey, I'm going to bounce to the very last thing on my list. What are the credit requirements to obtain a mortgage? And my first question is, we all talk about credit scores. Talk to us about what's a good credit score, what's a bad credit score.
Typically in the mortgage world, a credit score over 780 puts you in the top tier.
Okay.
So you're going to get the best rates. The next tier would be basically between 720 and 780.
And that's still really good credit, right?
Correct. Okay. Absolutely. And then average credit is typically 640 to 720.
Okay.
And then what we consider poor credit is 580. And that may just be below average, 580 to 620.
Okay.
Below 580,
you're going to have a tough time getting a mortgage.
Correct.
But there's things you can do to correct that and bring your score up.
Absolutely.
Are there businesses that actually help people with credit rebuilding and that kind
of thing? There are a lot of businesses that do that. Some do a good job. Some don't. Mm. I would caution people before they jump into that. So many of the companies want to collect a monthly fee. And I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that they paid a fee for a year and nothing changed on their credit.
You need to spend most of your money paying your bills on time.
Correct.
To redo your credit, right?
Correct. And there's ways then if people have got behind or they're now back on their feet but their scores are damaged, we have analyzers we can run basically through an automated system to give them some ideas of what they can do next to improve their credit score.
Yeah, and I'd really suggest people come over to KLYT and listen to Faith and Finance program that's on right before us. And actually it's on a little bit earlier, 11:30, I think. And you can get a lot of good input as to what you should be doing to get out of the hole in terms of debt and those kind of things. Spence is not on our list, but one of the things that I used to be concerned about, obviously as a loan officer, there are certain requirements. They want you to do a certain volume of loans. I remember I used to have people come in and say, look, I've got $40,000 worth of credit card debt. I've got, $200,000 equity in my house. Can you either do a second mortgage or a refinance, roll in that debt? Well, at first I didn't know enough about it to say, you know, I would just say, yeah, we'll be happy to do that. And that'll lower your monthly payments by $1,000 a month. But here was my concern. 2 years later, almost without exception, they had that $40,000 in credit card debt built up again. And so I didn't really do that much to help them.
Right.
I mean, I think it could be a great help. Sometimes it's not, because people don't, they get into those habits and they're not being disciplined.
They don't change their habits.
Yeah. And you know, what we're trying to do, especially on this station, is we're trying to get people to understand, look, there's a lot of tools out there, but if you don't do what God's telling you to do, you're going to end up having worse problems. And the tools and instruments you have as a loan specialist are not necessarily going to help them if they just don't do things the right way.
Correct.
Are you able to give anybody any spiritual encouragement as they consider some of these options?
Well, absolutely. I mean, obviously, the Bible talks about being a good steward of your money. Mm-hmm. And I find that people that are not paying attention to their finances and they're not being good stewards, they get in trouble. And like you just mentioned, they repeat the same behaviors. So again, in 2 or 3 years, they're back in trouble.
Yeah.
When I find people that come in and they have a budget and they tithe and they pay their bills on time and they save, you know, like Brian Cochran talked about, you get Yes. people in, like that, doing the right things, those kind of habits, they protect themselves and for their future much better than folks that don't take the time to sit down and basically bite the bullet and be hard on themselves for a while to get back on their feet.
And I want to encourage you, if you're in a financially difficult situation, there's a way out. And you need to involve some people that can help you with budgeting. You know, that could be an accountant, that could be somebody at your church that just does that kind of thing as a ministry. It would include a solid mortgage lender. It would include maybe a financial advisor. These are all people that if you get the right people, they're going to take care of you, and their commissions and all of those things are going to be secondary to taking care of you and helping you with what you have to do. But in the same breath, you can give yourself a temporary fix and then put yourself right back in the same situation, and that's really not your lender's fault, is it?
Absolutely not. And I think it's important for people to know that if they have had hurdles and their credit's bad and their financial house is not in order, if you will, good things happen or bad things happen to good people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that people know, hey, I got bad credit. I'm embarrassed. No need to be embarrassed. Come ask. I'm happy to talk to people. They may not be able to buy a house for 5 years, but I'm happy to sit down with them and give them some ideas and thoughts about not only the numbers, what to do, but to also encourage them that just because you've hit this financial canyon, if you will, that the good Lord is with you and you can get through this if you just have faith.
And let's talk about one of those scenarios from a listener. The listener writes, my dad is nearing the end of life, so it's probably a highly emotional time for this person. And he has a reverse mortgage on his home. I understand that he has left me his home in his will, but I don't know how a reverse mortgage works. What do they need to know for when dad passes? Again, you kind of addressed it in our first segment where you said that house is not owned by the bank.
Correct. What's very important, in this case, this gentleman's dad has is near the end of his life, has a reverse mortgage, the first thing he's going to want to do within a couple weeks of his dad passing is to contact the servicer, the company that is administering his reverse mortgage, and let them know, my dad's passed away, and we want to take care of the house. We're going to sell the house or we're going to buy the house. That communication will let the lender know, okay, there's a window. They give 90 days for that property to be disposed of. And if people can't get it done in 90 days, but they communicate with that loan servicer, mm-hmm. they'll get an extension. Yeah. So the key thing is don't ignore that. But if this happens to somebody who's a listener, all they would have to do is call me and say, what do I do? And I'll guide them.
Yeah. Well, and again, you're offering some free counsel to people. And, you know, I think that that's very, very valuable. And there's a lot of lenders that are very reputable and do that kind
Absolutely.
Of thing. Hoping today that you're listening to Spence and he's being very open about what type of lender you need to contact. Just generally speaking, this is what you should be looking for, people that are willing to assist you in these ways. Here's another scenario. I am retired and I have two rental homes. Both are free and clear. One of the homes needs about $40,000 of updates, including flooring, appliances, and HVAC repair. Can I use the income that I receive from the rental homes to qualify for a small cash-out mortgage to get the cash I need to make these updates and repairs? Both homes are worth $350,000. I have no other debt, and I have a credit score of 740. Our rental income on both homes is $6,000 per month. They're doing well.
Absolutely, and certainly sounds like they've got the equity, they've got the income based on the rental income, not counting Social Security income, to qualify for that cash-out refinance that will let them put the money right back into the rental properties to fix them up.
So that's self-employed income, technically. So is there additional documentation other than W-2s required to document that?
Absolutely. We would have to get the tax returns, the last 2 years' tax returns, and do an analysis of their overall income. Not just what the gross income is, but how much are they writing off?
Yes.
And then we come up with a figure of their net income, and that's the number we use to qualify them for the loan.
This is kind of a tricky thing, Spence, and we can't really cover it because there's too many different scenarios. But it is also a talent to be able to properly analyze tax returns. Because there are things that the IRS and the state of New Mexico will allow you to write off if you are a technically in business renting homes, because that's technically what you are,
exactly.
Even if you haven't set up an LLC or whatever. Maybe you're just flowing everything through your personal income. I guess an LLC and an S-Corp goes through your personal income anyway, but if you are an investor and you have some investment income, you actually need somebody that understands what we call the add backs, right?
Correct.
So what the IRS is saying your gross income is may be different from a mortgage lending rules perspective.
Correct. The big one on investment properties or rental properties is depreciation.
Hmm.
I mean, you depreciate the property every year, but that number actually gets added back into your income.
Yeah, so, there's all kinds of strategies that people deploy on their tax returns. Spence, you mentioned two things in one of your comments in this segment. You talked about people saving money. You talked about people giving. That's all part of a financial plan, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Sometimes people don't see giving or saving as part of the financial plan. But it really is.
Oh, it's huge. And that's, again, it goes back to discipline.
Mm.
I mean, you think about when we were little kids and we were taught, got our allowance, and you saved 10% for the offering plate at church on Sunday. And I think that's, and you saved the next 10% for your savings account or your piggy bank.
Mm-hmm.
And those people that have that kind of training, they end up doing very well in the world as they become adults and move on in their retirement years.
I love that. I know that we used to teach our kids, you know, give to the Lord for his work and then pay yourself, which was savings,
mm-hmm.
and live on 70 or 80% of your income. Now, that's easier said than done.
Correct.
I admit that right out of the gate. It is tough, especially when you have children, to afford living. So, you know, become part of a group. Be part of a fellowship. Talk about these kind of things with your friends. Get a mortgage lender that you can talk with. Have a financial planner. Have a CPA. These are all people that can speak into your life things that are true.
Right.
One of the things I talked to Brian Cochran about is, look, there's not 8,000 different ways to handle money. There's the right way and there's the wrong way. Now, there's various options within the right way. I mean, you might be more conservatively invested than some others may take a little bit more risk, so to speak. But, you know, that's all measured. Same thing with a home. Spence, I used to tell people that I could always loan them more money than they could afford. Is that still true?
Absolutely. I talk to people all the time about being house poor. And like I referenced earlier about when we pre-qualify somebody and let them know what their maximum is. When we talk about that maximum, it's like, but you don't want to go there unless there's mitigating circumstances, other income that we're not using in the qualifying picture that will let them handle that higher payment.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I've seen people where they have bought homes and can't put window coverings up.
Yeah.
They can't afford to buy the new clothes for their kids every year because they're strapped and they're house poor. No way to live, and we do our best to encourage people, don't do that. Make sure you can afford to eat and go out to dinner.
Spence, we're going to take our last segment here after this break, and the first question I'm going to have for you is whether a parent can give a gift to a child to help them get into a home. We'll talk about that right after this. Stay with us on ABQ Connect. Spence Llewellyn with the Davis team. Spence's name is Llewallen. If you want to Google that, his phone number is 505-263-2000. Their address is 4313 Corrales Road, Suite 6, Corrales, New Mexico, 87048. I have Spence on the program as our resident expert on mortgage lending because he has great knowledge of VA loans, FHA, conventional and reverse mortgage programs. He's an Air Force veteran, so he understands VA maybe a little bit more intricately than a lot of people do. And there's a lot of veterans in New Mexico, a lot of them, because we have various Air Force bases and things throughout the state. We have a big Army base in El Paso, and a lot of people come north to New Mexico out of El Paso and live here. So, Spence, you really do understand VA lending as well.
Absolutely.
And there's some real intricacies to VA lending, isn't there?
Oh, there are. There's some lot of flexibility in a VA loan that is not present in an FHA or conventional loan. So often, it comes down to what's good for the veteran.
Yeah. Well, let's go to my question that I brought up before the break, and that is, let's say that you have a child who has graduated from college or vocational school, or they're now working in the trades and have a good living, but they haven't had a chance to really save a lot of money. What is a parent allowed to do in terms of giving a down payment to help them?
Well, certainly gifts are allowed for down payments, closing costs, those type of things. I know there's some IRS rules that come into play, and I know there's caveats to those IRS rules. But the most common rule we hear about is a parent can give their child $18,000 tax-free towards a down payment on a home, basically for anything. If there's the child's married, they can actually give a gift to both the husband and the wife for $18,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been, and my advice is always check with your CPA to find out about this before you give the gift. Also, you can actually give more than that dollar amount, but you have to look at your tax planning for the future. And again, back to the CPA, but there are ways that a gift can be even larger than that amount.
Yeah, and I tell people very frequently that are involved in estate planning issues. You know, they have a will, they have trust set up or whatever they might have in terms of assets for their children, especially when there's multiple children, grandchildren, et cetera, involved. This really needs to be handled by a professional, somebody that's a trained financial planner. And Spence, you work with some of those people and some of those CPAs. They call you for advice on mortgage lending.
Correct.
And they do that because there's intricacies. So let's say that I want to buy a $250,000 house. I want to put down 20%, so I need $50,000 down. But don't forget, there's a little closing cost, right?
Correct.
So you think there's a pretty good shot at if a parent has the financial wherewithal, they might be able to give that child, say, $55,000 to put down and cover closing costs in that process?
Yes, absolutely. Again, I would advise them, the parent, to contact their CPA to make sure they do it the right way. But I've been told multiple times by CPAs that that's definitely doable, and we've done that with many people on loans in the past.
Here's a scenario that's kind of intricate, so I hope our listeners will appreciate this. My daughter has been working as a nurse for 1.5 years since graduating college. She has saved almost $20,000, and she is paying $1,800 per month in rent. Now, one of the things that mortgage lenders do, I've seen frequently, Spence, is compare what they're paying in rent to what it would cost to own a home. Is that a comparison that's fairly easy to put together?
Oh, absolutely. It's easy to put together, and oftentimes they find out that purchasing the home is less expensive on a monthly basis than the rent.
I love that. So in this scenario, the nurse's income is $85,000 per year, and the only debt she has is a car payment of $325,000. She does not have a credit card. Oh, no, she does have a credit card she pays off every month. But she was told when she went to a lender that she does not have three lines of credit to qualify for a mortgage. So here's a perfect credit person, great income, no real, you know, a little bit of debt with a car payment. But this doesn't sound right, does it?
Well, let me explain that. For a conventional loan, the requirement is three open trade lines, which would mean two credit cards or the credit card and a car and the one other credit card or some sort of revolving account like that. For an FHA loan, only two open lines of credit are involved. So you only have to have two. And a third solution here would be to find out, have your daughter's landlord or her landlord put the information of her rent history on her credit report. That's allowed now by the credit agencies.
And that's happened. You've done that.
Correct. And that would solve the three trade lines, as we call them, requirements.
So that would allow this young person to meet the three trade line requirements of a conventional loan.
Correct.
Is there a big difference between FHA and a conventional loan?
Well, the big difference is the down payment requirement. And really, a conventional loan, you could put 3% down, and FHA is 3.5%. FHA loans will give better treatment to people with lower credit scores, oftentimes people just starting out. But interest rates are lower on FHA loans. So depending on the overall scenario, we determine what's the best loan, conventional or FHA. But in either case, this person could most likely qualify for both.
And there's no real way for us to give you all the scenarios this afternoon, especially since we have 1 minute left. There's a lot to this. So you recommend that people call a lending professional, their CPA, and maybe a financial planner to kind of get all this together, because those three services all kind of need to be integrated, don't they?
Absolutely. Call a reputable lender. If you have a CPA, talk to them. Financial advisor, talk to them. But all professionals in those three categories typically will take the time to explain how everything works and what's best for your particular situation.
Spence, why have you been doing this for 30-plus years? Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoy helping people, and I enjoy the fact that every situation's different.
Yeah, and you're kind of learning every day, aren't you?
It's absolutely.
Because they don't keep the rules the same more than about a week.
No, correct.
And every loan, I mean, there's so many different loans. So VA loans, FHA loans, conventional loans, reverse mortgage programs, all financial instruments with different intricacies. Spence Llewellyn is part of the Llewellyn team, and he's 50% of that team. His daughter works with him as a loan processor. Their office is located at 4313 Corrales Road, Suite 6. Their phone number is 505-263-2000. How's your baseball teams doing, Spence?
Well, one of them's doing good, one of them's doing bad. So
tell us.
The White Sox.
Is that one of your favorite teams?
Well, I like them because they're like the beautiful losers right now. They lost like 24 games in a row or something like that.
Now, did I just see that Mr. Bregman hit a home run against them a couple nights ago when they played the Astros?
I think everybody does. They're having a terrible season.
I love it. Spence, you're gracious to help us. Thanks for supporting ABQ Connect. We appreciate
it. Thank you.